Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Tuesday morning, May 12th. We are recording this in the morning, the second ever College Basketball Talk Podcast recorded in the morning, because we had 25 minutes of absolute podcast gold disappear into the ether last night because my internet decided not to cooperate. I am Rob Doster. I am the guy with the faulty internet. I am joined by Bobby Reagan, the host of the Fundamentally Sound podcast, and we have plenty to get to. But first and foremost, Reeves, how disappointed are you that our Pulitzer-winning podcast was just disappeared last night? Gone. Vanished. Completely lost.
I mean, I think the people were in for a treat. I had a bottle of wine at dinner. We had our craft beer for the craft beer cast. I was ready to unleash, which I will again this morning, but I'm tired. We're dads. Like, we're not ready to talk in the morning. We just want to be left alone.
Yeah, my voice is scratchy. I've only had like 3 sips of coffee.
Right.
You know, there's that thing in the morning where like your mouth just doesn't work the right way. So forming complete sentences and trying to be able to enunciate is a little bit difficult. So if we sound like we're tired and talking at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's because we're tired and talking at 8 o'clock in the morning. So we do have a lot to get to on this pod. I do want to talk about, we haven't talked about Kansas and their response and the NCAA's response and all of that. I do have one hypothetical I want to bring up to you from The Last Dance that has kind of been bugging me for the last couple of days. And we do have a special guest appearance coming from one Mr. Reagan, Bobby's father.
Big Bob.
He's going to come in. Big Bob is going to come down and he's going to critique this new hairstyle that Reeks has today. But before we do all that, we have to talk about the big news of the day, and that's these lawsuits that Zion Williamson is dealing with. And I know you have a take, and you had a pretty good column go up. I guess it was yesterday at this point.
Yeah.
But just let me set the stage real quick for what's going on with this. In April of 2019, just a couple of days after Zion Williamson declared for the NBA draft, he signed with Gina Ford of Prime Sports Marketing to handle all of his endorsement deals, to be more or less his marketing agent, the person that talks to Nike or Jordan or Puma or Mercedes-Benz or whoever it is that he's trying to get sponsorship deals from. She would be the one negotiating those deals. Obviously, Zion Williamson's marketability makes him a very, very, very valuable endorsement person, I guess, for lack of a better word. So she was in line to make a lot of money off of that. 6 or 8 weeks after he signed that deal, he backed out of it. Now, he ended up signing with CAA to be his basketball representative and wanted to join them for the marketing side of it as well, obviously, because everyone wants a piece. If you can get 3% of Zion's endorsement deals, you are going to be set for the rest of your life. So that's a big contract that they're trying to sign. Now, these lawsuits all kind of stem from the fact that Zion Williamson had signed this contract and then backed out of this contract. And according to Ford and her lawyers and in the lawsuits that they filed, there was the only language in there for Zion to be able to break it was that she had to be fired with cause.
Right.
And she did nothing to allow them to be fired with cause, which, you know, would be a very easy way to read that as a breach of contract. But what is kind of the underlining point here, and maybe the biggest discussion point, is that there is a law on the books in North Carolina that says that student athletes have to be told, and there has to be language in every agency contract that they sign that says that signing this will eliminate all of your student athlete eligibility and make you ineligible to play college athletics basically for the rest of your life, more or less. So if you sign this agreement, if you sign with this agent, you forego your college eligibility. And according to the reports that I've read, I believe this one was from Michael McCann from Sports Illustrated, that language was not in the contract. And according to Zion's attorneys and Zion's court case and Zion, the argument that they're making was that this nullifies the contract and makes it so that contract was never actually a legal binding document. And there may be some merit there. But this leads to what happened on Friday, where a court filing in a Miami courtroom from Gina Ford and her attorneys basically had all of these questions. They're called requests for admission, and they created a little bit of a, I guess, a conflagration on the internet, because they are not good for Duke. There are questions about asking Zion Williamson and his mother and his stepfather to confirm whether or not they were paid by Nike, whether or not they were paid by Adidas to wear those shoes, whether or not they were paid by someone on behalf of Duke to enroll in that university. There are questions about where they lived when Zion spent his 1 year in Durham and 1 year at Duke. There are questions about who his landlord was. There are questions they're asking to see rent checks. All of these things and all of the rumors that we've heard over the years about Zion and about his 1 year at Duke, it's all kind of coming to light, and they're making these asks about it. And the reason that Gina Ford and her attorneys are doing this is because they are trying to prove that at the time that Zion Williamson signed his contract with Gina Ford, he had already made himself ineligible by his own actions. And if he has to answer under oath that he accepted this money, if he admits under oath that he accepted this money, that would make him ineligible, which means that signing that contract was it didn't break any laws because he wasn't currently an eligible student athlete. So it's a whole bunch of legalese. There's $200 million on the line. If I had to guess, this stuff is probably going to end up getting settled, and it's probably never going to have any of those questions and requests for admission answered. And just to clarify one thing, these are not allegations and these are not accusations that are being made in these requests for admissions. The way that it works in civil cases, from my understanding, and if there's any legal experts out there that are listening to this, please correct me, because I'm not pretending to be a lawyer by any stretch of the imagination. This is just what my understanding is. Requests for admission in civil cases are basically the way that you do discovery. It's the way that you kind of find what information, try to get stuff on the record, try to iron down what somebody's story is so that you can say, okay, see what they just said. This means that this was true. This was true. This was true. This is why I get this X amount of money. This is why I've been damaged, blah, 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 all that kind of good stuff. So it's not that Gina Ford has evidence. And I believe she confirmed that or her lawyers confirmed that when they spoke with Dana O'Neill of The Athletic, and basically saying, I don't have the exact quote in front of me right now. I probably should. But he basically said, this is what we've heard. This is what we're trying to figure out. So it's kind of a fishing expedition, but it's a fishing expedition based on rumors, hearsay, and what has been kind of assumed in the basketball world over the course of the last, 18 months or so. So that kind of sets the stage. And I guess on Sunday and Monday, it's become a massive, massive story. There's nothing going on in sports. So as soon as Zion Williamson and Duke's name get brought into this, it becomes a massive thing. So what was your first takeaway? What was your reaction? How do you feel about all this, Riggs? I'll open the floor to you.
So real quick, they're fishing, but they're shooting fish with a barrel, right? Like Zion Williamson and his stepfather, I believe it was, their name came up in the trial with Kansas and Curtis Townsend, the assistant coach at Kansas, and Adidas for benefits to during recruiting to get him to Kansas. So this isn't a new story, right? Like,
So basically what happened in that trial is that they played a wiretap in court. I think they read the transcript of a wiretap in court where Merle Code is talking with Curtis Townsend, the Kansas assistant. And Merle Code basically says what the father is looking for is occupational opportunities, money in the pocket, and a place to live. And I believe that's the direct quote.
Yeah, he went full blue chips. And yes, the
I just want someone to one day come, like, go into one of these meetings and get on a wiretap where they say, I just want 6 Ricky Rowe duffel bags.
Right. I just want to I want a tractor.
Not enough people get my reference when I say Ricky Rowe duffel bags. And it pisses me off.
The good thing about that for Duke is, and Kansas in a way, is the NCAA, or the court ruled that it was not usable, essentially. It wasn't allowed. So that got kicked out, whatever. We all know what, like, let me be very clear. I don't give a shit if Zion Williamson or his family received money, received benefits, whatever it might be, to play college basketball. Because you're talking about a guy that is the biggest name in college basketball history of this era, or at least biggest name of this era, right? Maybe not the most successful, whatever, but he's the biggest name. Everyone knew who he was. His first game against Kentucky, the casual fan knew who he was, like, moments after that ended. My thing, and why this is so big, and the reason people actually care about this, is specific to Coach K and Duke, whether it's the fans, the alumni, even people on staff there, they have this holier-than-thou bullshit. And it just rubs people the wrong way. Like, that, we talked about it a bit last night. Duke is one of the 3 national brands to me. It's Duke, Kentucky, Carolina. Nobody is indifferent on those 3 programs. You love them or you hate them. No in between. So you have that. You have Krzyzewski, who is, you know, I've said it before. Krzyzewski is the best coach in college basketball history. He's also a sore loser. He's a gigantic asshole. Like, we have all these stories of these things popping up, right? Like, whether he's yelling at kids, the story of him allegedly making Semi Ojeleye's mom cry. There's all this stuff. But he's the most successful coach ever in my eyes. He's better than John Wooden. He's the greatest college basketball coach of all time. That's why people care. And, like, yeah, I'm cheering for this to happen, not to ruin Zion in any way, because let's be honest, he won't be tarnished. Zion won't be tarnished, anything like that. I want, for lack of a better word, Coach K to be exposed that he is like every single other coach and Duke is like every other single program in America. Why do we keep acting like this doesn't happen at the Brotherhood?
Yeah, I think that you're – the way that you view this is the way that most of the general public does. I'll take it a step further from what you said. I think that Duke is the most polarizing program in college basketball. And I think it's singular in that fact because they are the national brand, right? Like, if you live in the Midwest and you live in Kentucky, like, you either love the Wildcats or you hate the Wildcats. If you live in North Carolina, you either love the Tar Heels or you're an NC State fan or a Duke fan or a Wake fan and you hate the Tar Heels. But nationally, Duke is on that level of like the New York Yankees or the Dallas Cowboys or, you know, someone when you get to that point where even in like the middle of nowhere in Nebraska, you're going to find people that that either love the Yankees because they're Yankees fans for some reason or hate the Yankees because everybody hates the Yankees. I think the Red Sox have kind of crossed that threshold, right? Where you either love the Red Sox or you hate the Red Sox because you hate Red Sox fans. And I think that's kind of what Duke is from a college basketball sense. And to your point, like, Coach K has become like the pinnacle of one and done recruiting over the course of the last 5 years. And in an era where we say everybody cheats and where we say there's bidding wars for all of these players.
Let's be clear. We're using quotes when we say cheat because we don't care.
It breaks NCAA's rules. Right. And like, I feel like we say this on every podcast now, but
we have to set the tone for new listeners.
There are certain NCAA rules on the rule books that we don't agree with, but they are still rules. So we have to talk about it in the context of reality, even if we don't agree with what that reality is. So in an era where everybody cheats and there's bidding wars for players, and you can very clearly see that there are agents and money swirling around and all of this stuff available to Zion Williamson when he is still an amateur. And it just kind of – in the era where this is happening, And Coach Cal is absolutely dominating everyone and getting Zion and RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish and Vernon Carey.
Coach K is dominating, not Coach Cal. Those guys did not
Coach
go to
K.
Kentucky.
I'm sorry. Did I say Coach Cal?
Yeah.
It was
Those guys
Coach
did not
K.
go to Kentucky.
Well, it's because it's going to get into my next point. Yeah. And I'm sorry. It's hard. We can't have both. Like, those two guys cannot be Coach K and Coach Cal. Like, we got to mix that up. Whoever allowed that to happen, just shame on you, because I can't get anything right. And now you're expecting me to get that right at 8 o'clock in the morning? What are we doing? So in an era where Coach K and Duke are dominating the one-and-done recruiting scene, they're the only ones that are doing it cleanly, right, where everybody else is cheating and all of these kids are still deciding to go to Duke. That's just not it just does not seem like something that is based in reality. And I think that that kind of annoys people. I think that very much annoys Kentucky fans, because Coach Cal – the reason why he's kind of viewed as a cheater nationally, and he's never been able to escape, like, his reputation has never been able to escape this, is what happened with Marcus Camby at UMass, where Marcus Camby accepted, what was it, $28,000,
something like
from
that,
an agent when he was before his senior year, which, like, I guess Coach Cal should have known, but, like, how do you know if a guy's going to accept money from an agent? And that's not really all that different from what's happened here with Zion Williamson. And the question is, will this actually stick to Coach K? Because what happened with Corey Maggette when he took money and admitted he took money from Myron Piggy hasn't stuck with Coach K. What happened with Lance Thomas, where he had $30,000 in cash to put down as a down payment on $67,000 in jewelry, which he bought in 2009, a year before he was a member of the 2010 Duke National Championship team, that didn't stick to Coach K. Wendell Carter showing up in expense reports for Christian Dawkins, that didn't come up. Like, that didn't stick to Coach K. Marvin Bagley accepting money from Nike for an AAU team, which, like, by the way, is perfectly acceptable, and everything going on with that recruitment didn't stick to Coach K. So while he's had all of these scandals, none of them have actually tarnished, like, the glossy veneer of the Duke program. And I think that that annoys people that hate Duke, that annoys people that are fans of Kentucky, that annoys North Carolina fans, because their reputation has been tarnished by what happened with the academic scandal, even though, like, that turned out to not – they beat that. And people still think that they were cheating or whatever, because they probably were. But either way, like, that's what people are kind of looking for. And the real interesting thing to me is just, you know, what – if Zion had gone to Kentucky and all of this had come out, like, the reaction – to me would be entirely different, even though it would be basically the same situation.
Same old Cal, slimy Cal. That's like, that would be trending on Twitter if Zion went to Kentucky. Instead, there's always an excuse, right? Like you mentioned, Lance Thomas, the only reason that banner is still hanging at Cameron Indoor, the jeweler didn't talk to the NCAA, because you don't have to talk to the NCAA. They're not a court of law. To go even further, Wendell Carter is part of the reason Georgia Tech was on probation this last year and was forced to sit out of the ACC tournament for a game because he was allegedly taken to a strip club by a booster known as Jarrett Jack and received $300. So there are other stories where it's like, okay, if that's going to happen at Georgia Tech, do you really think that something similar isn't going to happen at Duke or anywhere else in the country? What bothers me too is the notion from Duke fans that K could just switch and get these recruits because he's K. To a degree, sure. But when he had been so outspoken about not wanting to do one and done and how one and done players don't work, and then the moment Cal wins in 12, Duke becomes like the haven of one and dones. Like, he just adjusted to the times, which, credit to him, he realized you need guys. Like, hot take again, the best players tend to win in this thing, right? Like, it tends to help to have a guy like Zion or Kyrie or Jahlil Okafor, just fill in the blank. You don't just change on a whim like that. Like, yes, your name carries a little bit of weight, to where you'll be linked to almost every recruit. You have a step in the door that way. But even Mike Bray had a quote in The Athletic to Dane O'Neill, Seth Davis wrote the article, where, and I don't have the exact quote, but essentially he was saying, every single program uses shoe companies. Wait, that's illegal? Like, yeah, like I'll receive a call from Under Armour to say, hey, we're hosting this event in Dallas. You should check this kid out. That's Notre Dame, and I'm not talking football. Like, Duke is on that level.
That's a big conversation and something that we're going to get to when we talk about the Kansas violations and the Kansas accusations in a couple of minutes. A couple other things I want to talk about with Zion before we move on. I think first and foremost, like, to me, this really showcases how fucking stupid the case against Christian Dawkins was and the way that the FBI handled that was. Because if you remember, what they kept doing is pushing Christian Dawkins to try to give money to coaches to get those coaches to exert their influence on a player and funnel them to an agent and funnel them to a financial advisor and funnel them to whatever, right? And Christian Dawkins just kept saying, like, that is not how this works. Like, like, what are you talking about? Like, why do you want to go to the coaches? Because that's the way that the FBI was going to find someone and, like, create some kind of fake whatever. Like, we don't need to talk about that again. But when you see it happening in reality, playing out for us right here, these guys are going to, like, John Shire and saying, hey, Shire, can you get Zion Williamson to sign with us? Like, CAA is not sitting there knocking on his door being like, hey, man, you got to make sure that Zion Williamson comes and signs with us. You know, we'll hook you up. We'll give you $5,000 a month if you get Zion Williamson to sign with us. That's not how it works. You don't see Geno Ford wasn't there, like, banging down Nolan Smith's door saying, hey, man, hook us up. Get me in the door. Tell me where Zion Williamson lives so I can go over there and give him some really nice Nikes, and I'll hook you up with, like, $2,000 in gift cards to whatever the fuck. So it's, to me, it's just proof of, like, what happened with Christian Dawkins. I don't want to say entrapment because I don't know if, like, that's the right legal term, but they really set him up in a way that makes it clear to me that he was not necessarily committing a crime. He was kind of
right.
coerced into doing something that he wouldn't normally do. And I don't know if that's entrapment or whatever it is, but it doesn't seem like it makes all that much sense to me. The other thing is, like, Zion Williamson, now, like, as nice of a kid as he is and as jovial of a kid as he is, and he's somehow managed to get himself into three separate legal cases over his recruitment when you're at Duke. You have the one where he's being sued by Geno Ford, right? And all of those, the whatever, however many different lawsuits that's going to end up taking. And honestly, if I had to guess at this, Riggs, we're never going to have any of those requests for admissions answered.
No, it's never going to happen.
What's going to happen is they're going to end up settling because Zion Williamson is going to realize that it is just utterly idiotic for him to keep going this way. They're going to pay, like, I don't know, like $6 million or something like that. Like, Geno Ford is going to get a pretty healthy cut of money, and Zion Williamson is going to pay and settle to make this go away because, like, why would you want this to keep going? Why would you want this out there? Then he had the Michael Avenatti issue that he was involved in, where he was brought up in so what happened with Michael Avenatti, who, like, obviously was Stormy Daniels' attorney, was the guy trying to – I think he even ran for president at one point. Do you remember when he called me a scumbag on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Michael Avenatti one time called me a scumbag on Twitter. And he was trying to blackmail Nike for, like, $20 million. And part of the reason he was trying to blackmail them is because he had some text messages and other things that showcased that they had paid – Zion Williamson, I think it was like $35,000 or something like that, was saying what they were going to give Zion Williamson. Like, that would have kept him around, right? That's probably why he ended up playing for an Adidas AAU program. So he was involved in that one. And then, of course, he got his name brought up in the Christian Dawkins Morocco Jim Gatto trial. So three separate legal cases that have arrived from Zion Williamson. And to me, that just kind of proves, like, how much value does this kid have, right? You have all these people fighting over him. And the other part it proves is, like, we could sit here and say, like, you got to make name, image, and likeness allowed. And to me, it's just kind of evidence that, like, you know what? It's already here.
Yeah,
it is. All of this shit is already happening. All the stuff that we say, just make it legal, all of it's already happening. And if you can't see that, if you can't see that, if you can't understand that, then your head's in the sand. Name, image, and likeness, all that stuff is already here.
Right.
They're all pushing it back for a year. It creates an underground economy where all these scumbags pop up and you have all these agents. And let me ask you this, Reeves, because I don't have a clear answer on this. My sense is that part of the reason, like, I don't understand why, if you're Zion Williamson, and you know how big of a brand you're going to end up being, and you know that you're going to end up being one of those guys, the caliber of player where actual basketball is your side gig, where you could be a legit billion-dollar endorsement guy, why would you sign with like Gina Ford, Prime Sports Marketing from the get-go? My thought, and I don't have anything to back this up. This is just speculation. I want to make that very clear. My guess is that they were probably taking money from her.
Yeah.
And she probably had some dirt on them. And she said, I'm going to expose this unless you sign with me.
Yes. Because we've seen this before. We'll see it in the future. We'll see it in the present. Like, this is not anything new. And that's been my biggest problem because, A, like you said, there's not a whole hell of a lot else going on right now that we're just sitting around talking about this story, and it's all over Twitter. It's all over every website you go to. I've gotten in so many fights with people where I'm just like, yes, like K is clean the same way every other coach is clean that hasn't been officially ruled by the or hit with an allegation by the NCAA. Yeah. But at the same time, like, we've seen this story play out. Like, we've seen, like you mentioned, Marcus Camby. Like, there are just so many examples you can use where it's like, oh, yeah, like, that happened in this. That's what's happening here with Zion.
Yeah. The only other thing that I'd add is I do feel like this is a prime example of why it's a good thing to allow these kids to have access to legitimate representation as young as they want. Because if Zion Williamson is, like...
He's with CAA at 15, essentially.
Yeah, if he's able to sign something official and he doesn't have to, like, he doesn't have it. Maybe his parents still have their hands out and they're taking payouts from anybody, and maybe there's, like, this still ends up happening in some cases. But for the most part, if you can get in with, like, some kind of legitimate representation as young as possible, where, like, I don't understand, honestly, like, I don't understand why agents kind of had this bad rap in college basketball.
They're
because
doing their
agents
job.
Are the only ones where their monetary success is directly tied with the monetary success of a player. And I know that, like, making money isn't the only goal that you should have in life or as a basketball player, but at the end of the day, like, pro basketball is a job, right?
Yeah.
Like, all of the, it's a money-making venture, and
you have a limited time to make that money.
Yes. And agents get paid a percentage of whatever the players get paid. Right. So anything that's good monetarily for a player is good monetarily for an agent. And anything that agent can do, and even if the player doesn't want to take the thing that's the most money, keeping that player happy and getting 3% of $10 million instead of $20 million is better than getting 3% of zero.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So if the choice is you're going to get a guy $10 million, you're going to get a guy $20 million, you're getting 3% of that, I'd rather have the 3% of $10 million than have him leave to go sign with someone else because you were trying to force him to take the deal he didn't want. So whatever it is, like, the agents, not the coaches, not the guys that are looking for handouts, not the guys that are looking to funnel a player to a certain program, it's the agents that are going to have the best monetary interest at heart. And at the end of the day, like, the best life interest, because if you're trying to make sure that that player ends up being the best player he can be, the only way you can do that is by getting to a place where he's going to develop, where he's going to play hard, where he's going to be happy, where he's going to keep loving the sport, blah, 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 blah. So there are bad agents out there, but the concept of an agent is so much better than the concept of, like, a handler or the concept of a guy that's just looking for a payout or the concept of, like, a sleazy AU. Does what I'm trying to say make sense?
Yeah. Agents are just doing their job. And
yes,
their job rubs people the wrong way because, like you said, their money is based on the money their clients make.
Yeah. And the reason why there's kind of like this negative connotation with agents is because since signing a player when they're an amateur is, like, still against NCAA rules and amateurism exists, the only way you can do that is to try to do stuff under the table. And doing stuff under the table takes away potentially, like, NCAA eligibility and
takes down a banner at UMass
it all kind of comes down to this idea that, like, getting paid to play sports even if you're in college is a bad thing. And I like, it's so hard for me to wrap my head around.
Listen, I got paid to write about sports in college. Guess what my job is now? To blog about sports. Like, it's obviously low here compared to what we're talking about. But it's the same thing, right? Like, my future job was to write about sports. I got paid to do that in college. Zion Williamson's future job was to play basketball. He should be able to get paid to do that in college.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. So Kansas.
I say next violation up.
Next violation up. We don't have to spend too much time on this because it basically what happened was we know about the Kansas getting the notice of allegations from the NCAA, 5 level 1 violations, 2 at Curtis Townsend, like a failure to monitor charge, Bill Self getting hit with something. And we know like Kansas in March pushed back and said, all of this is wrong. Everything that you said is wrong. And the NCAA responded to Kansas' response and said, no, everything we said was right. You're wrong. And now we think you're all assholes, more or less, is what kind of happened there.
Can we just talk about the funniest part of this whole thing? Like, what's that? We need to. First off, a 92-page PDF is cruel and unusual punishment. Like, yeah, that should be hit with it enough.
Didn't the response that Kansas filed was like 300-something pages? Like, and that didn't even count like the notes at the end. It was like 400-page PDF. Yeah. I delete pictures of my children on my computer to be able to download that because I didn't have enough space on my hard drive.
Let's get back to like the Michael Jordan, I'm back. Like, just send like 2 words in these PDFs back and forth. But in the NCAA's response to Kansas.
The response was a response.
They brought up Bill Self wearing the Adidas shirt and money sign necklace. That is the greatest thing in any NCAA violation court case of all time.
I just love that that people like at the top of the Kansas athletic department refer to TJ Gasnola as Lucky Luciano and Tony Soprano.
Yeah. It's all this. So, like,
if you've ever met TJ Gasnola, it's not really all that far away. No,
but it's like I've just started laughing at this whole thing strictly because it's just outrageous things like that. Like Nancy LeBay being like, okay, we thought you were fine, but now you're really an asshole because Bill Self, before Midnight Madness, wore not even a Kansas shirt, just a big old Adidas T-shirt like every dad has, and a money sign necklace.
Yeah, the worst part about it for him was that. Was that like they referenced columns that were written? I think they referenced like a Mike DeCourcy column or something like that. Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah. So they, that was like a media driven thing where we were like, look at him trolling the NCAA.
It blew up Twitter.
And Bill Self, to his credit, said, like, that's not what I was doing. Like, Kansas or Adidas pays us like $20 million a year, or whatever, $17 million a year. And I'm just like wearing the logo. I wasn't trolling the NCAA. I was, we have a sponsor and I was wearing the logo of a sponsor. Like it's not unusual to do. Yeah. Like he always has like Yeezys on. You know, he's always,
it's just usually not that prominent tweeted out by the athletic department Twitter account.
The fact was the logo like took up his entire shirt. Bill Self has a little bit of a gut, so it's a little bit bigger than it normally is, and he's wearing a gold chain over it. And then after that, at the actual Midnight Madness itself, you have like remember they weren't strippers because they were fully clothed, but they were dancers on stripper poles firing fake money into the crowd while Snoop Dogg was out there rapping. It was just
which is like the third funniest thing of that whole Midnight Madness. You had the mascot, what is it, Jay, the dog or whatever, smoking a blunt in the background. Like, he had a doobie hanging out of his mouth. The whole thing is just the funniest thing in a long, long time. That's all I wanted to talk about because it's just – we're beating a dead horse when it comes to, like, what's going on with the allegations. It's the funniest – it just reached hilarious terms now.
Yeah, so I just feel like based on the vitriol that was written in both of those responses – it's very obvious to me that there's only two ways that this is going to play out, right? The first way is that the NCAA is going to give Kansas, they're going to find out what Kansas would find to be an acceptable punishment. Let's say it ends up being a 1-year postseason ban. Bill Self gets suspended for like 15 games. Like what's the max that they can give? I think it's 15 games, something like that. 1-year postseason ban, suspended for 15 games. They lose like 2 scholarships a year for the next 3 years, and they have all sorts of recruiting restrictions, and they get put on like double secret probation for the next like 8 million years for the rest of the time. If Kansas gets hit with that, I think Kansas kind of says, you know what? since this will pretty much be done before next college basketball season starts, if Kansas gets hit with that and they say, okay, the only year where we're going to miss the tournament is the one where the coronavirus may or may not like allow the tournament to actually happen in the way that we expect it to. And that we can move on from this and I can go out there and I can be Bill Self and I can recruit again without having the questions of whether or not like, but are you going to be playing in this year's NCAA tournament? Will I go there for a one and done year and never actually see March Madness? If he can get back to normal with just a 1 year postseason ban and suspended for however many games, if I'm Kansas, I probably accept that, right? Because if the NCAA goes over the top and hands down like what, like a 3 year postseason ban, 2 year postseason ban, which is I think unprecedented. If they come out and they hammer Kansas, which like rightfully they can do, then I feel like Kansas is gonna end up trying to take this to a higher court. And this is gonna be like a legal battle. Court.
Yeah.
So the two ways that it plays out are the NCAA finds what Kansas would deem acceptable, gives them that, and then just completely moves on. Or they're going to try to make an example out of Kansas, completely hammer them, and open themselves up to the risk of potentially having Kansas win this in court. Like, we saw North Carolina beat the NCAA in court, and we just kind of laughed at them and said, huh, like, you, how could, like, we saw them cheating. How can you not get in? Like, how can you not do this?
They had an out.
Because you're the NCAA and you have no power. And the out here for Kansas is that they're going to argue, like the whole crux of this argument, we talked about the crux of the Zion argument being whether or not like Gina Ford violated the UAAA, which by the way, like do you remember this when it comes to Zion? In mid-May of last year, there were all those rumors about the Zion potentially coming back to school.
Yeah.
You remember that?
That could have been tied into the UAA.
Now, if I was a cynic, I'm not a cynic, Riggs, but if I was a cynic, you know what I would say? I would say, Zion signed with Gina Ford in April. In June, he signed with CAA. In the middle of all that, there's these rumors about him coming back to school while knowing that the only way that they can void that contract is if they prove that Gina Ford like cost Zion his eligibility by not having that language in the contract that he signed. If I was a cynic, I would say all of that was a well-orchestrated PR ploy by the people of CAA to create paper trail and headlines that said Zion wanted to come back to school, but he couldn't because he signed with Gina Ford.
Yep.
But I'm not a cynic, Riggs.
Oh, I am. I love the conspiracy. Give me the conspiracy, especially when it comes to sports conspiracy theories. I live for those.
I don't know.
Give me the frozen envelope.
I just could not see Zion Williamson and CAA and Duke doing something like that.
No. I mean, they're a clean program. Never once had an NCAA violation.
Yeah. So the crux of the Kansas deal is that the NCAA is trying to identify TJ Gasnola and Adidas and Joe Gatto and World Code and all those other guys involved with that company, trying to identify them as boosters for the Kansas program. Whereas Kansas is like shoe companies. Like, do you realize what you're going to do if you open up shoe companies to being boosters? Like, does that mean that
every program gets shut down?
Does that mean that like Aramark is a booster because they sell the food at like the Kansas concession stands? You know, it opens up a whole can of worms that I'm not sure the NCAA wants to open up. And if they say that, if this goes to a higher court, like I think that Kansas would probably lose if they went to a higher court. But like, let's say that there's a 25% chance that Kansas could end up winning their argument, right? There's a 25% chance then that the NCAA gets proven to be completely toothless.
Yeah.
Is it worth it to get like an extra year of a postseason ban on Kansas?
No.
I don't know if that's necessarily worth the risk. So to me, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because we're talking about five level one allegations here, whether it's Self getting hit, whether it's Kansas getting hit. I'm curious to see how it plays out because we've seen Kansas is not – they're going to go down swinging. They're going to go down with a fight, which is opposite of how Louisville started this whole thing. So I'm curious to see how the NCAA handles it because I think they're going to try to prove a point with Kansas. But we always hear NCAA doesn't want to punish blue bloods.
Yeah, and look, the big thing to me is – I don't understand how you separate shoe companies from college basketball.
It's impossible.
Like,
it's impossible.
Does, Does it end the EYBL?
Or
can you have a shoe, like, can you have a shoe company sponsored AAU program if shoe companies are considered boosters for college basketball teams? I don't think you can. Like, how can a kid be out here accepting gear, accepting flights, accepting travel, all of this stuff from Nike as part of the EYBL if Nike is considered a booster for all Nike-funded college basketball programs? How can you have Zion Williamson on the Adidas circuit if Adidas is considered a booster for all these college basketball programs? That, like, it's impossible. You can't do that because shoe companies are so intertwined with college athletics. And, like, if we're going to be honest, the best thing that ever happened to grassroots basketball, the best thing that ever happened to AAU basketball, that ever happened to recruiting, that ever happened to evaluating, was the creation of the EYBL. Yep. I don't think people realize how good that competition is. Like, AAU basketball before that was basically just, like, teams that were thrown together, mercenaries more or less, that were thrown into tournaments that were completely disorganized, that were run out of, like, random high school gyms. People driving. It was the wild, wild west.
It really was. And then I played an AAU team that was self-created. Like, we didn't have a program, so we just made one.
Yeah.
Went and played in a bunch of tournaments and qualified for nationals.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the way it goes at the lower levels still. But the thing is, at the higher levels where you want to have all of this talent condensed, right? Like, you don't want teams where you have one guy that is a top 10 recruit and a bunch of guys like us on the roster,
right?
Like, that just it doesn't kind of create the competition level that you're looking for. Whereas in the EYBL, like, the 10 best teams in the EYBL all have guys that are going to go high major, like, as a complete starting five.
Yeah, the worst player is like a low major player.
Yeah, there was a time when Cole Anthony was on the same team as Mo Bamba, as Brandon Randolph, as Hassan French, who ended up going to St. Louis. Yep. Like, that team had like seven high major guys on it. They were all different grades, but there were seven high major guys on it.
I mean, Trey Young, Michael Porter Jr., they won the Peach Jam together with what?
Yeah, they were.
Like, that was, and then they had Jontay Porter was on that team, and there was somebody else on that team.
There was Parker Brown and Christian Brown were both on those teams. Like, it creates a level of competition that you see nowhere else on the grassroots circuit. And the kids actually care about it. Like, they play so hard at Peach Jam. To me, Peach Jam is one of my favorite events to go to every year.
It's awesome to watch live.
Yeah.
Because,
the Final Four, the Champions Classic, and Peach Jam are like my three favorite events to go to every single year. So, taking that away, I think, is just – I don't understand what the point of that would be for the NCAA. I got nothing else to add on Kansas, do you?
No, I just keep feeding us comedy because that's the point I've reached right now with this whole thing.
All right. So, Michael Jordan, The Last Dance. I have a take. Well, it's not really a take, but it was a conversation I had last week. And I kind of feel both ways about it. I don't really know, like, where I necessarily land when it comes to this. But the conversation I was having was that in today's NBA, Scottie Pippen, if you take away what their professional careers ended up being, and you only look at them as what they were as prospects coming out of the draft, that Scottie Pippen would be considered a better prospect for the modern NBA than Michael Jordan would be.
Yeah, you're wrong. Like, you're wrong.
You don't know which side I land on. It's just a conversation that I was having.
I mean, I know you told me what side you land on. Well, that's
no, the reason I did not.
You said you would take Scottie Pippen.
No, I didn't. Did I say? I don't think
yes,
I said.
Yes, you did.
That's not where I land. That's not where I land.
Okay, because you definitely made it sound like you took Scottie
Pippen. I think it's a conversation that is worth. What did I say? Yeah, the conversation that I had is that, like, Scottie Pippen would get taken over Jordan.
Yeah, you don't take Scottie Pippen over Jordan.
I think that it's closer than people realize. Jordan probably still goes number one because, like, National Player of the Year, coming out of North Carolina, he was a McDonald's All-American, like, all the hype, won a national title.
He's also versatile. Like, that's the argument. He's obviously not as versatile as Pippen, who was a point forward, but Jordan could guard multiple positions. He could play on the ball or off the ball, right? Like, he is versatile. Like, he fits that wing spot exactly how you want him to. Yeah. He's a the combo big question,
guard. The big question about Jordan is that, like, would the shooting have been there, right? Like, would his style of play work in the – well, Pippen, senior year, he shot 58% from three.
I know, but that's also Central Arkansas.
But 58% of 58% sure. Doesn't matter where you're playing at. 58% – Reeves, 58% from three.
I get that, but I'm saying, like, Jordan – I get that's the argument, but – you take Michael Jordan number one coming out of college. I get the argument. It's a closer argument, but even then, like, you're still taking the guy who hit the buzzer, like the game winner against Georgetown in the championship game, was National Player of the Year, UNC, like, athletic as hell, versatile, could play on the ball, could play off the ball, was a great defender. You take that guy number one, and then you take Pippen too.
Yeah. I think that's probably where I land, mostly because, like, one of them went to North Carolina and one of them was playing in the NAIA, and you're never right. Like, you would never take the NAIA guy, especially in these days. Like, first and foremost, Pippen would never, like, end up at the NAIA school. He would have, like, transferred
out. He's at Arkansas. Kirk Musselman's calling him after year one.
Yes, he would have been somewhere else. You never take the NAIA guy over the North Carolina National Player of the Year, first and foremost. Secondly, if this was the modern NBA, like, Michael Jordan would have been a much, much, much better 3-point shooter.
Right. I mean, that's a whole different argument, but.
Like, so the way that I look at it is, you know how Kawhi Leonard has turned himself into an elite 3-point shooter?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan would have turned himself into an elite 3-point. Like, we saw in the Last Dance documentary that he would, like, go to the batting cages for hours and hours and hours every single day. And after not playing baseball for 14 years, he started out, like, he had a 13-game hitting streak to start his double-A career. And he ended up hitting over 200 at double-A as a 31-year-old that hadn't played baseball in 14 years.
Yep.
And I know people are just going to be like, oh, it's double-A, whatever. Like, one, do you realize how hard it is to hit a baseball?
I know.
First and foremost, like, to hit a baseball that's thrown by somebody at 85 miles an hour is, like, damn near impossible. Second of all, he hadn't played baseball in 14 years since he was a senior in high school.
And he's 14 like guys years. Who are trying to be professional baseball players. It's not like he's played some slapdicks baseball in the backyard. Player. Right.
It would be like, imagine if Ken Griffey Jr., right, when he was 31 years old, quit baseball, went to the G League, and Kenny averaged Lofton. 20 points a game.
Kenny Lofton played at Arizona. If he would have left the Indians.
No, because he would have played until he was 22. Ken Griffey Jr. didn't play. Let's just say that Ken Griffey Jr. stopped playing baseball when he was a senior in high school, and as a 31-year-old was like, you know what? I'm not really cut out for playing center, being the best center fielder on the planet. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to play in the G League. And then average like 12 points a game, and everyone was like, you know what? He sucks. He only averaged 12 points a game.
Pretty good.
Jordan hit 200 at double-A baseball.
Oh, this after bum's like only shooting 32% from three.
Yeah, and you're going to tell me that if this dude knew he needed to be a three-point shooter, he wouldn't be like one of the damn near best three-point shooters in the NBA? Like, there's no way. Like, Michael Jordan turned himself into a post player because that was the best way to function in the triangle offense. And you don't think that in an era where you have to make threes, he wouldn't be a great three-point shooter? So that's where I come down on this, is that
I get
there's a certain caliber of work ethic that Michael Jordan has where he was going to end up being whatever he needed to be to make it work at the NBA level. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Pippen would no longer – like, he wouldn't go fifth in the draft, like in the modern NBA, as a like a versatile, switchable 6'7" point forward that can guard power forwards, that can guard point guards, and that could actually play the point himself and also shot 58% from three as a senior in college. He never would have gone fifth in the draft. He
goes two.
But Jordan, like, whatever Jordan needs to do to make himself the best, he would be the best. That's kind of where I come down on that conversation. So now let me bring on a special guest with Reegs over there in Cincinnati. We have Big Bob Regan here in the house. First and foremost, I got to ask you, man, we got this new haircut that your son has. It's for people that can't see it or don't follow him on Instagram, it's a shaved head with a big old bushy ZZ Top beard. And I'm just kind of curious how you feel about it. Does he look good? Like, what? Give me. I need some ratings here on this. Were you surprised when you saw it the first time?
He was sitting here when it happened.
I was sitting here when it happened. Let's just say that if it were 20 years ago and he walked in the house that way, he'd be going right back out to the barber.
My wife and mother shaved it for me.
Yeah, it Riggs, it needed to happen, man.
It,
needed-
it looks better than what it did.
It was time to come on home.
It was.
How do you feel about the beard? I'm a little jealous. I'm not going to lie. I've been growing my beard since the start of quarantine. I'm not even close to what that guy's got.
Nah, he's got to. It's got to get trimmed. Looks too Amish for me.
All right. So you're a Wake Forest fan.
How much do you know about alumni? Steve? Yep.
So how much do you know about Steve Forbes? How do you feel about him? Are you happy about this? Are you glad that the Danny Manning era is finally mercifully over?
Absolutely. Probably 2 to 3 years too late. You know, Forbes obviously, in my opinion, was probably going to be, one of the top two that they were going to pick, knowing that with the buyout, they weren't going to be able to probably go bigger than, a mid-major type of coach. Obviously, he didn't start out well already with, his first comment about Kentucky. So a little disappointed in at least the startup, and certainly he's going to have his hands full trying to get a roster put together that can, even come close to competing with the bottom 25% of the ACC.
So your son obviously went to Kentucky. So when you heard Steve Forbes saying that Kentucky was not a great academic institution, did you immediately think, yeah, of course, that's the one that my son could get into?
He didn't respond when I texted him. My cousin, who grew up a Maryland fan, he's the same age, said he was going to frame that quote and give it to my dad to hang in his office.
the first thought that came to mind was, SARS must have probably, signed the transfer protocol paperwork using a crayon, because that's what the administration paperwork required from Bobby when he applied to UK years ago.
Oh man. So was Forbes the guy you wanted? Was that the right hire for you?
I actually was leaning towards the guy from Wofford. I wanted to see, what maybe he could do at a larger scale.
Wofford, you mean Wofford, you're thinking of Wes Miller at UNC Greensboro.
No.
I didn't Wofford?
Yeah, I wanted the Wofford guy.
He was there for 1 year.
That's okay. I didn't want Odom from
UMBC.
I didn't want Bayline. I thought that would have been horrendous. They need, more youth. I'm not upset with Forbes, but, I wasn't real excited when Manning was the pick, though, either. I wanted, maybe to, unfortunately, the status of Wake, through the Buzeldick years, totally transformed us into, not even a desirable spot. So, had we had a little better, situation without Buzeldick, I was actually hoping maybe we could get Miller from Dayton to ultimately go to, the ACC or something like that. But, it's a program that's kind of hit, hopefully, rock bottom. Hopefully, we can't go lower than where we're at.
There's not much lower to go, man. There's not much lower to go.
No. I mean, I looked up last night. I was there during the end of the Carl Tacy years. So my freshman year, Wake had one of their best recruiting classes ever. And, obviously, it was when everybody stayed in school 4 years before turning pro. In my last 2 years, Wake had more than 20 wins and less than 10 losses each year. So that's kind of what I remembered. And of course, then, we had the Odom years and the Prosser years, which, even the Dino Gaudia years were okay. In between, we had Bob Stack, which, was the first version of Danny Manning as a head coach. And I think he actually had a slightly worse record than Manning and then Manning. So hopefully we can rebound.
So every time that Riggs comes on to this pod, he tells us about how good he was as a high school basketball player and all these places that were recruiting him. And I need to know, is he telling the truth first and foremost? And can you give me a scouting report of what a high school season, high school senior version of Bobby Regan looked like?
He was quick. He could guard, the full 90 feet and, was very good at anticipating a crossover or a spin move and was able to pick most of the point guards in the county. He was very good at seeing the floor and passing the ball. He was definitely a pass first, shoot second.
Just say I'm an undersized white point guard, because that's everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, was he also a coach's son and scrappy and real savvy?
Well, truth be told, although he was all that on the court his senior year, he could never beat his father on the driveway, even today. So the hard to beat old man move where I just back him up and elbow him until I'm close enough to try to get a shot up.
Well, see, this is where you run into trouble, because now that he's got the shaved head, he's officially an old man.
Oh, so I have a long anymore. Time before that haircut.
All right, last thing, and then I'll let you get out of here. You allowed him to become a Giants fan and an Orioles fan. I have a 4-year-old son. How do I avoid cursing him with that kind of fandom?
Wait a minute. Well, I'm an Orioles fan because he's a Mets fan and told me not to be a Mets fan.
Fair enough.
Yeah, truth be told, it was, about fourth grade, and he came to his mother and said for Christmas he wanted a Eagles starter jacket. And this is when we were living in Pennsylvania at the time. And he was a Vi Sikahima fan back then. And I told his mother, there is no way, in this world that I'm ever going to buy an Eagles starter jacket for him. And she went out and bought him one. He had it for about a year or two. And then when he grew out of it, I bought a Giants one for him. So he is still on the provisional Giant fan list, because you never cross that boundary into being an Eagles fan and then be allowed to come back without some time spent in Giant purgatory. So, but he latched on to the Orioles. That was the closest MLB team to where we lived. And like I said, as a Met fan back then, I wasn't about to force him in that direction.
Well, listen, man, I appreciate you waking up early and coming on this podcast with us. And I actually appreciate the truthful evaluation of Reeg's basketball skills, because the way that he tells the story, he was basically Jason Williams, just like he, it was politics why he couldn't end up at Duke or Kentucky or Wake Forest. So, as always, please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast, give us 5 stars, say as nice things, make us happy as podcasters. And when you're done doing that on this pod, go find the Fundamentally Sound podcast. It's the one that Reeg hosts. It's where he saves all of his best takes and best dad interviews. Reeg and family, thank you.
Thank you.